viciously attacked for doing this work. It's true. For even talking about race, I've been called a troublemaker and an outside agitator. For trying to see how we could get more teachers of color, I've been called an anti-white reverse racist. For asking hard questions about the strength of communities and neighborhoods and families, I've been accused of being an anti-black racist. I've not yet, at least not to my face, been accused of being an anti-Latino or anti-Asian racist, but I'm sure it's just a matter of time. For working closely with the current administration, I've been called a capitalist collaborator, a sellout. For opposing efforts to demonize teachers and for not supporting every charter school, regardless of its quality, I've been called a socialist defender of union hacks. I get it from every side. Sometimes I wonder why I bother. But I'll tell you why. Because our faith demands it of us, calls us to transform the world from inhumanity to love, says, do the hard work. If not you, who? Our faith says that all people, no exceptions, all people have dignity and worth. We've stood against racism for centuries. Many of our forebearers were abolitionists. A white Unitarian minister co-founded the NAACP, and we stood shoulder to shoulder with Dr. King and the civil rights movement. And we've been working and teaching against racism wherever we go. And we have worked for public education. Indeed, Horace Mann, the founder of public schools in this country, did that work because of his Unitarian faith. He saw a patchwork of schools system, often poorly run or sectarian schools, and he believed that we needed common public free schools, where every student could get an education and help them achieve their dreams, and where people of every walk of life would mix and interact, and so doing, help bind the new nation together. So this work against racism and for public education, this work is embedded in our heritage and our commitments. 5 years ago, we adopted a long-range plan at this church, and that plan called for us to focus our social justice work on one area. We discerned what that should be, and we decided to take on what felt like the biggest issue in Rockford, racism and public education. And you have done work in this area with school uniforms and helping nurses and other projects for years, so we are building on a strong legacy. We created an anti-racism team to help us learn more and be more aware as we do the work. We adopted a school, and then when that closed, adopted a new school, and folks have been tutoring kids. Raise your hand if you've been a tutor. Anybody in this room? They had a few. Yeah, excellent. Thank you. We are working with other congregations to form an interfaith coalition for social change. And I've been preaching about racism and racial justice. So raise your hand if you've heard me preach about racism in the last 3 years. We are all here today, so by the end of the day, we'll have every hand up. And I've been working with the school board and the school district on this and with various community organizations. And I have learned a lot doing this work. And though it is not always rewarding, sometimes it is. Friday, I was called at the last minute to sub in for another preacher who had a funeral for Career Day at Lewis Lemon Elementary School. The third through the fifth graders mostly were curious and engaged students. The teachers were thankful and gracious. It was a lovely morning. I gave up my Friday morning when I would usually be writing and then editing the sermon to practice what I will preach today. I figured it was more important to do it than just talk about it. So the sermon could have used one more edit, but that's what you get. But this is lesson one. Get involved in the public schools. Tutor and mentor and volunteer. Do it. Before we get to the other to-do lists, the other instructions, let's talk about the problem. What is the problem? What's going on? Start with the achievement gap. Lower outcomes for African-American students and Hispanic students. The district uses something called the Discovery Education Assessment for its own internal assessment of students, which is abbreviated the DEA, which is sort of funny. And the first time I saw it, I thought, what kind of test are we giving? But that's what it's called, the DEA. And there are four proficiency levels to the test, levels 1 through 4. If this chart makes sense to you, that's great. If it doesn't, don't even look at it. Just turn your eyes away. It's okay. This is the reading test that the K through 8 students took in December, and the white students had an almost perfect distribution, 1/4 of the students at each level. However, 43% of the black students and 47% of the Hispanic students scored at the lowest level, while only 7 and 8% respectively scored at the highest level. This isn't just about poverty, by the way, though poverty is a big part of this. On the same test, the students who qualify for a free lunch scored 42% on the lowest level and 10% on the highest. What that means is that Hispanic students as a whole and black students as a whole did worse on the reading test than free lunch students as a whole. Tardiness and absenteeism are worse for black students. Suspensions and expulsions are much worse, especially for African-American 9th and 10th grade boys. So far this year in the Rockford Public Schools, there have been 99 expulsions, 76 of them African-Americans, and 67 of the total 99 expulsions were either 9th or 10th graders. Graduation rates are worse for African-American and Hispanic students, and college attendance and completion all worse. These facts have consequences for the children of these children born into generational poverty, deep unemployment, government dependency, and crime. When I was sitting with Colleen Holmbeck on Thursday afternoon, Colleen, who had served on the school board in the 70s and 80s, who, like Tom Shaheen before her, had tried to integrate the schools in Rockford before the lawsuit forced it. On Thursday, Colleen said, after joking that Jack's tennis game would never be the same, she said, "He was just a scared and angry kid. And we have to change these kids' lives by third grade." Same thing she'd said when she was on the school board, to change their lives or this is what we get. She's not wrong about that. Social failure plus educational failure leads to more social failure. I could go on, but the point I think is made. We have a problem. Well, why? Why is it like this? Why? The most complicated question, the most contentious. Some say it is because of non-school environmental factors, and there's a big camp of people who believe this, and they're very sure that they have the right answer. They point to things like the quality of parenting. Absent fathers, two young mothers, too much television, poor discipline. Or the quality of the neighborhood. No jobs, too much crime, too little opportunity. Another problem people have been talking about recently is lead exposure. Lead slows the growth of the brain, especially in infants, and it leads to a lack of impulse control and the ability to complete tasks. And though lead is no longer in our gasoline, it is still in the soil and the buildings, especially in dense urban areas where those gasoline fumes in the 1970s were concentrated and in the soil. Dense urban areas where high poverty, black and Hispanic kids are growing up. Lead. Malnutrition is a problem. The brain needs good food, especially vegetables, to grow strong in the first few years. It's incredibly important. How many full-service brand name grocery stores are on the southwest side of Rockford? None. Not a single one. Food deserts. Plus, lack of transportation to other stores for many people means parents get what they can carry at the gas station. Would you buy fresh fruit at the gas station? Vegetables for your kids? These non-school factors can explain why high poverty students of color have worse outcomes than other students. A combination of a lack of parental resources, lead poisoning, malnutrition, lack of pathways to success, and so on. Residential segregation, the topic for a whole nother sermon, traps these kids in places where success is very hard to achieve. That's one camp. But others say, no, it isn't non-school factors, it's that our schools systemically discriminate against students of color, especially high poverty students of color. Every student would thrive if they just had better schools, they say. This goes the argument of Michelle Rhee and Arne Duncan and Bill Gates. We warehouse these students, the argument goes. We put them in schools with inexperienced teachers, less opportunities, old textbooks, and so on. There's a point here that's true. Per pupil spending in wealthy suburbs is $15,000, $20,000 a student. In Rockford and a lot of other high poverty districts, it's half that. But even within a school district, there are inequalities between schools that perpetuate racial discrimination. The data bears this out. A tale of two schools. On the east side of town, Cherry Valley Elementary School. 63% white and 80% of the students meet or exceed state test standards. Cherry Valley's free and reduced lunch rate is 58%, which is not small, but sort of in the middle of the pack. At Cherry Valley, the average teacher pay is almost $75,000 because they have a lot of experienced teacher. A brand new teacher does not make that much money, but if you've been at it for a while, you make a decent wage. At Cherry Valley, the unfilled vacancies percentage is 5%. So that's the percent of the time that the teacher needed a substitute and they couldn't get one. So the principal or another teacher or the librarian or whoever just had to cover the class. So the unfilled vacancies percentage at Cherry Valley is 5%. Then, in the center of town, across the street from the Black Hawk Public Housing Complex, Beyer Elementary. At Beyer, less than 10% of the students are white. Only 46% meet or exceed state test standards. The free and reduced lunch rate is 95%. The average teacher salary, $55,000. $20,000 less per year per teacher than Cherry Valley because they have inexperienced teachers, new teachers who don't make as much money. Teachers without the seniority to bail out and get an easier job elsewhere in the district. The unfilled vacancy rate, the percent of the time that a teacher wasn't there and they couldn't get a sub to come, somebody else had to cover the class, 46% of the time, compared to Cherry Valley's 5%. I could have compared Brookview to King or Rolling Green to McIntosh. It's the same story. We don't always use this many numbers and charts in worship. If you're new with us, this is a little unusual. Every once in a while, we dive deep. But the point that we put high poverty students in schools with inexperienced teachers and that we don't serve those students as well as we should, this point is borne out by the data. There are other school-based reasons for the achievement gap that people can point to: lack of multicultural competence, which creates disengaged learners, and sends kids who think they are acting normal to the principal's office for acting out. Examples and projects that don't speak to the real lives kids lead, and so on and so forth. So which is it? And these two sides in the education debate, they yell at each other. They are convinced that they are right and the other is wrong. It's non-school factors, it's school factors. They go at it. What's the answer? Both, obviously. Of course it's both. I think all sides need to admit this. It's everything. which means we can't pass the buck and say, oh, it's just the parents' fault, so the rest of us are off the hook. Or it's just the teacher's fault, and if we just fired all the teachers, it'd all be fine. Or it's the government's fault, throw up our hands, nothing can be done. It's everybody's problem. Everyone is to blame, and everyone must act to fix it. And that means that there is no silver bullet or magic fix. No one thing by itself will fix things. We have to do lots of things. I already mentioned one, volunteer in the schools. Whether you have kids in them or not, tutor, help with special events, join the PTO for your local neighborhood school. You don't have to have kids in the school to do that. Sign up for Career Day. It's a lot of fun. Do something to help out. If you don't know where to start, come and ask me. We'll find a way to match up your gifts and your time availability with something that needs to be done. Second, I want to invite you and engage you and compel you to join with me in advocating and organizing for the public policy that will make the greatest difference for the most kids: quality preschool for all. There are lots of policy things that need to be done: teacher training and teacher diversity, teacher placement, leadership, curriculum redesign, etc., etc. I got a long list. But the most effective for these kids is preschool. We're going to put our energy in one place, that's the place. Kids who need preschool don't have lobbyists. They don't have someone to shout for them, to buy off somebody for them. I see on Friday that Congress decided to cancel the sequester for people wealthy enough to fly on airplanes. God forbid that we should wait an extra hour to fly on an airplane. But Head Start kids who got thrown out of the program when it was cut, they're out of luck. Nobody to complain to. Nobody to hear them. Nothing makes a bigger difference for high poverty kids than preschool. Nothing is more cost effective and long lasting as an intervention. Won't solve every problem. Won't make everything perfect, but it will go a long way. And guess what? The Rockford Public Schools are great at preschool. It's one of the things we do really well. We won all kinds of state awards for our preschool program, but we don't have enough money to admit more kids into the program, or enough money to transport the kids from home to the program. State funding is, well, it's Illinois. What do you think? Unreliable at best. In his budget, the president proposed increasing taxes on cigarettes to pay for a national expansion of preschool. It's a great idea. It would reduce smoking and get more kids in preschool. It'd be wonderful. And if you think that's likely to pass, I got a bridge in Brooklyn I would love to sell you, and we'll use the money for the schools. We need to change the conversation, change the priorities. Each one of us needs to become a lobbyist for a high-poverty three-year-old. Make that your mission. Write letters, call, talk it up. Make it part of the conversation. I'm very serious about this. Next time someone brings up a problem, crime, unemployment, the achievement gap, whatever, you say, you know, the research says very clearly that more and better preschool would help solve that. How do you think we can make that happen? Become a fierce advocate for these kids. Because if it isn't us, then who will do it? They can't do it themselves. They're three. Their parents don't have the time or the social capital that some of us do. Use whatever power you have to advocate for expansions in these programs until we serve every child who can't otherwise afford it with high-quality preschool. Do that, and we will serve these kids well, and we will serve society 20 or 30 years down the road very well. It's the right thing to do. There's a lot of other things we need to do too, but start there. Third, stop bickering. Pettiness, name-calling, unfounded accusations of malfeasance, this turns people away from the work. it is unhelpful. Be part of the solution or pick another issue, because these kids are not served by such behavior. Whether you or someone you know, or whether you're against the teachers' union or against the superintendent or against the school board or against the business leaders, whatever you are against, whoever you are against, stop. We don't need against. We need people who will be for these kids, these three-year-olds and third graders who need us. So praise what's right and be part of the solution, and don't allow yourself or others that you know that you might hear that kind of conversation, don't allow people to attack others personally. It's unbecoming for Unitarian Universalists to permit such behavior. That's three things you can do: volunteer, advocate, and be positive. If you want to know more things that you can do, if you can do those and you got more time, let me know, because I got a long list of things.